Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Liberalism. Now, there's a word you might hear bantered about these days. What does liberalism mean, and why should we care whether it exists or not? Let's ask Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine, to fill us in. Lincoln, what do we need to know?
Well, first of all, we're using a loaded term, and, yes. I think somewhere around 9/11, for reasons a little bit other than 9/11, language started to be subverted. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always mean what it meant historically or by pure definitions in the dictionary anymore. So I need to clear the air and say I don't mean the liberalism in the sense of liberals and conservatives in the political sphere.
Okay.
But as the United States often spoke of itself in the past, it was a liberal democracy versus the authoritarian regimes and other nefarious systems around the world, or some just plain dysfunctional. And there's a quote that one of our authors in Liberty recently included in an article that I think was right on the mark. He was quoting a Patrick Deanan, Notre Dame political scientist, in his book Why Liberalism Failed. And Deanan said, "The end of liberalism is in sight, and this may lead either to liberal-ocratic despotism or the rigid and potentially cruel authoritarian regime." Mm-hmm. Now, that's heavy stuff.
It is. It is.
And it got my attention, and the article was written, to point out that the liberalism that formed this country, the United States, can't easily be separated from Christian faith, from religious faith, and that in the separating of it or the renewed attempt to separate it, we are exposing ourselves and perhaps setting a direction toward, as he says, a despotism or an authoritarianism.
Well, give us a working definition, just a one-sentence working definition of the word liberalism right now, Lincoln.
Well, liberalism was a progressive view forward from the despotism, the theocratic control and all the rest of the medieval era.
Yes.
The Dark Ages, it was called. And the Dark Ages really was in regard to thinking. Because, you know, I think history has subverted certain things. The idea of the Dark Ages that it was extremely dark and non-active,
yes,
and that nothing much went on in Europe is to miss the point a bit. There was a vibrant civilization.
Sure.
But the mechanisms of thought and of governance were very repressive and very limited.
Okay.
And so with the advent particularly of printing, of dissipation of knowledge, and of people thinking beyond the box, man's horizons opened. He discovered what the Bible holds out, that man has a certain autonomous right. He has to acknowledge God, but he's a thinking creature. God says, come, let us reason together, and that mankind and man's systems that restrict the individual are not admirable, either religiously or socially. And so there was a flowering of the individual spirit that led, in some cases, to revolutions, but it was revolutionary in the way that it restructured society and led directly to the establishment of the United States, this liberal democracy.
Okay.
The article points out that some aspects of liberalism became decidedly anti-religious. And France, as it headed toward its French Revolution, which in itself was a violent rejection of the union of church and state and of religious control, in establishing its form of liberalism, it very consciously, through its different philosophers,
yes,
Voltaire and others, it became antagonistic toward religion and tried to structure a liberalism that had no religious base. But in doing that, and it's easy to go, and this article quotes some of them, it's easy to see that they did it in a radical, adamant anti-Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that in this new, brave world, we are the God within. Mm-hmm. The autonomy of the individual rejected all moral constraints. But the English and then the American liberalism never made that break. And I think at this late point, the democratic liberalism of the United States is still rather unique, and people forget that it's unique and retains more of an openness and freedom because of this Christian religious alliance, where the European liberalism is weak-kneed and not going anywhere practical.
Okay. So we're talking about a liberalism in America that not only allows but encourages both sides of the sword, that is, religious thought and no religious thought at the same time, parallel, simultaneous.
Right.
Okay.
Well, let me read a little bit about what's going on. Like he says here, 19th century ideologies and aesthetic projects were shaped by biblical prophecy, particularly in England and Germany, two great Protestant nations with a history of theological and political radicalism. And he says, all 19th century ideologies and movements, romanticism, nationalism, liberalism, positivism, utilitarianism, Hegelianism, German idealism, Marxism, Darwinism, neoclassic economics, were hatched in a milieu animated by apocalyptic fears and millennial hopes.
My.
That had a religious point.
Yeah.
But how they went from there is important. Obviously, communism rejected religion as the opiate of the people, and it established the religion of man with his apocalyptic or millennial hopes. Absent religion. He's actually quoting from someone else. Concealed theological assumptions underlie modernity.
Concealed. Concealed. Unpack that for us.
Well, he says, I'm speaking here of the French philosophers who credited the venerable English Trinity, Bacon, Locke, and Newton,
okay,
with the ideas that inspired their own enlightenment, yet deviously uprooted their thought from its biblical apocalyptic moorings.
Okay. Okay.
And it's easy to show that those English philosophers, and John Locke is pretty much called the father of the American experiment, but the three of them, Bacon, Locke, and Newton, all were deeply religious. In fact, Isaac Newton, his main preoccupation was biblical exposition. Most people have forgotten it, but even in finding the law of gravity, his attempt was to show that God directly acted in this force, that it wasn't sort of a self-existing law as we see it now, which doesn't negate God, but it's a more mechanical way to describe it. But he was trying to prove a theological point.
That is continuing now, that a lot of what is going on in liberalism includes a concealed spirituality, almost.
Right.
Okay.
Well, like, here's another quote that I think is good. He speaks of Nietzsche, the German philosopher who had much to do with the rise of Nazism. You know, Nietzsche spoke of the Superman,
yes,
the coming,
yes,
Uberman, who was separate from all religious compunctions, and he, in essence, became a god in his own right.
Yeah.
You know, this is the great deception of Eden. Satan said, you know, you'll become like gods.
Yeah.
But he says, Nietzsche's historic importance is in unmasking the Enlightenment hypocrisy or dishonesty of rejecting Christianity while retaining its moral and humanitarian values. He called for radical honesty. Christianity must be rejected in toto, including values derived from it, equality and democracy.
So where do we find ourselves now on that timeline?
This is a shocking statement. The choice, as he starkly put it, is Dionysus, in other words, the pagan ideal, against the crucified.
Are we continuing that? You sort of hint that we're still doing that. Are we letting that kind of concept grow in our society today?
Well, this is the unintended consequence, I think, of a radical separation of church and state,
okay,
without understanding,
yes,
what is at stake. We want a separation of church and state in a governmental sense, but never in a societal sense.
Okay.
Now, there's a group that pop up now and then in the U.S., at least in the Supreme Court, called the Freedom From Religion Society.
Freedom From Religion. Okay, gotcha.
They want to expunge religion from every aspect,
yes,
of life, not,
yes,
just in the,
yes,
government.
Yes.
That will be suicidal for this society because its very underpinnings, as I'm trying to point out, have a Christian morality and a Christian continuum at play here. Liberalism without that corrective can go in some very dangerous and startling and undemocratic directions.
That is powerful. You just said without that corrective. You're saying that our belief in God, our acceptance of God, our wanting to follow God can act as a corrective element in our society. Am I right?
Right.
Okay.
I'm in the mood to quote this article, so here I'll read a few more sentences.
Sure.
He says, in placing limits on government and insisting on the limits of human understanding, John Locke was also informed by the same goal to restrain pride. Remember, that's the original sin.
That's exactly right, yes.
Indeed, all major early modern English thinkers, including the American founding fathers, had a deep aversion to pride based on the theological anthropology of Luther and Calvin. And Calvin is the Reformation godfather of America,
yes.
Not Luther,
yes.
Which blamed the fall on pride, on the desire to become God. As Francis Fukuyama, a more modern American social commentator, acutely noted, the Anglo-Saxon tradition of liberalism takes its decisive turn in the relative moral weight assigned to the passions of pride or vanity, which it deplored as the source of all violence and human misery.
This dates back pre-Garden of Eden. The devil himself, pride was his falling element. That's what made him leave it all.
Now, I'm going to draw a dot that the article does, or connect some dots the article doesn't so overtly.
Yeah.
But if America now is downplaying its religious roots of the very structure we have, and we're touting ourselves with chest beating as the greatest of nations, I think what that statement comes true. It's the source of violence and misery.
Yes.
You'll have the despotism of an empowered Uberman, Superman,
yes.
But not the charity of Christianity. We're in a very dangerous pass, I think.
Mm. We don't even realize it, Lincoln. We are just blindly going about our business, taking care of ourselves, taking care of our families, taking care of business, while the world is literally beginning to crack around us. Am I on the right track saying that?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My.
Let me finish with an interesting Russian writer, Dostoevsky.
Yes.
And it's a quote at the end of the article. He says, Dostoevsky accurately predicted the deformations of the Russian Revolution. And he has the devil himself tracing the heaven-storming trajectory of continental philosophy. And he says in the end, this is a direct quote, man will be lifted up with a spirit of divine titanic pride, and the man-god will appear.
Oh, wow.
And the author says, to put it directly, after liberalism comes the Antichrist.
My, Lincoln, this program has given me shivers from the top of my head to the toes of my feet. I thank you for that because it should be a wake-up call for every one of us.
Well, wake-up call for some, but for all, I think we need to think and muse deeply on the origins of the freedoms we have. God-given, yes, as the Declaration of Independence said, but how did we come to where we are now, and what's happening now, where will it lead us?
Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazine. LibertyMagazine.org is the website. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Lincoln Steed inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at LibertyMagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.